Blog Talk Radio.
Woo! Leaning to the left side. Leaning to the right. Mud in my two cups. I've been faded all night. I love calling you at 4 in the morning. Faded, telling you things about me I wouldn't tell you sober. I got problems big enough to break the realest nigga. I got family who never see the bigger picture. I got women bad enough to turn the straightest bitches. I keep flirting with these hoes, but I never finish. I do not know when I'ma go, when I'ma die. So I drink and I smoke, I stay lit. I stay lit. Yeah, so I stay lit. Yeah, stay lit. Yeah, stay lit. Leaning to the right side, leaning to the left, sipping on this, oh my God, there ain't nothing left. Somebody pass me an already lit spliff. I'm way too faded to roll one. Fitting in with all the misfits. I need a co one. I got problems big enough to break the realest nigga. I got family who never see the bigger picture. I got women bad enough to turn the straightest bitches. I keep flirting with these hoes, but I never finish. Cause I do not know when I'ma go, when I'ma die. So I drink and I smoke, I stay lit. I stay lit. Yeah, so I stay lit.
Everybody, happy Sunday, and welcome to another Sunday of Urban Society. This is a India Morrell production, Dollhouse Radio. You're listening to Urban Society. I'm your host, James A. Jones, and my co-host, I haven't heard from him, so I'm not sure if he's going to be here tonight or not, but we shall see what happens. But as we know, the show goes on. And it's getting colder up here in New York, which means it's getting worse up here weather-wise, but then again, as it said, in a lot of cases, sometimes things do get worse before they get better. It's like that. So anyway, moving right along and into the show. As of late, with this new phone that I have, I'm able to download books from Amazon and other areas. And it's quite interesting. I'm loving this. But anyway, being able to download books, I had downloaded recently a Shakespearean play that I've been trying to get for the longest on Amazon, but wasn't able to get it because they didn't yet have it. But now I do have it. And the play in particular is one called Titus Andronicus. It's a long story as to what the play is about, but one thing that sticks out to me in that play is a black character in this play entitled Titus Andronicus. And the black character's name is Aaron. And he's quite a character in that play. I mean, wow, talk about a vicious individual. He's off the hook and chain. honestly. But anyway, when I read that play, I couldn't help but think, you know, but then again, consider too, when Shakespeare lived, and therefore when he wrote this play back in the 15th century, yes, well, believe it or not, yes, black folks were there then also. And Shakespeare, he had quite a few blacks in plays that he had written. He always, well, not always had one or two in there, but there are a few of his plays wherein he did have some black characters in there, and then again, he did imbue them with real human sentiments, you know, able to love, able to hate, and, you know, things along that nature within the human spectrum, as opposed to always just being a MF and clown, as we see in media today. But anyway, this character, come back to this character, this play, Titus Andronicus, and this character, Aaron. What I'm going to read here now is at a part in the play wherein he has been discovered in terms of things that he has done. And right now, he is somewhat running down his pedigree. That's the way I had read it in the play, but this part that I got here, it doesn't say it like that. But this is what this guy says, this guy Aaron. He's considered to be a Moor, long story, but a black person. He says, "Even now I curse the day, and yet I think few come within the compass of my curse, wherein I did not some notorious ill as kill a man, or else devise his death, ravish a maid, or plot the way to do it, accuse some innocent, and forswear myself, set deadly enmity between two friends, make poor men's cattle break their necks, set fire on barns and haystacks in the night, and bid the owners quench them with their tears. Oft have I digged up dead men from their graves, and set them upright at their dear friend's door, even when their sorrow almost were forgot, and on their skins, as on the barks of trees, have with my knife carved in Roman letters, 'Let not your sorrow die, though I am dead.' Tut, I have done 1,000 dreadful things, as willingly as one kill a fly, and nothing grieves me heartily indeed, but that I cannot do 10,000 more." I just had to do just what I just did there, a serious explosion of breath when I read, I said, damn. But you know what? There are a lot of people, there have been always people like him, and then too, there are still people like him in this day, because the more things change, the more they remain the same. But the thing is, though, we have to be aware of this kind of person in all our goings to and fro in this existence. And the thing is, we have to be aware that people like this do exist. Just foul individuals, completely foul, and totally lacking in compassion, lacking in they do have reason, strange though it may be. But still, we have to be aware of these kind of individuals, because they do in fact exist amongst us, and in a very bad way, in a very bad way. So, moving right along, but also before I do that, let me give out our topics that we're going to go into tonight. Okay, I see that I had jumped right on into that because that was on my mind. I wanted to throw that out there to the listeners, if you all weren't aware of this play entitled Titus Andronicus. But anyway, our topics tonight we're going to go into, I'm going to finally get to what is intersectionality. And then topic number two will be mental illness and gun violence. Topic three will be cultural appropriation, what that is or isn't. But again, as usual, before I go there, I want to read out a few other things I had come across via Facebook and or just browsing the internet, looking for things to speak on. And one thing that I really wanted to bring up when I seen it, because a lot of us don't know this, what I'm going to read now. However, I came to know this that I'm going to read now a long time ago. The article is entitled "Racism at Crosswalks: Study Finds Drivers Less Likely to Stop for Black People at Crosswalks." Did you all know that? I knew that a long time ago. I found it out. Yes, I did. Interesting. But anyway, the article goes that a study by the University of Arizona and Portland State University found that black pedestrians had to wait longer to cross than white ones. The study showed black pedestrians waited 32% longer than white pedestrians to cross and were twice as likely to see multiple cars pass before one stopped. The research project employed three black men and three white men in their 20s who all dressed similarly. The test subjects each crossed the road 15 times. The researchers observed 173 drivers in downtown Portland. Researchers said the study would aid in transportation planning. It goes further to say that many on the right, that is political right, meaning more so racist individuals, many on the right, such as Chief Justice John Roberts, would like to believe racism and bias are a thing of the past. The View host, it goes into this as well, the View host Raven Simone had to issue a hasty apology after she said that she wouldn't hire anyone with a ghetto name. As ignorant as she sounded, Raven Simone was merely vocalizing a practice that is all too common in corporate America. Now back to the drivers. Drivers were clearly displaying behaviors consistent with implicit racial bias, said Arlie Atkins, a University of Arizona transportation planning expert. We were surprised at just how stark the difference was. Tara Goodard, a Portland State University researcher, said she was also surprised at the differences revealed in the study. It's amazing to look at something you thought might be subtle and to see it instead so clearly, Goodard told OregonLive.com. Racial bias applies to so many areas of life, so it makes sense that it takes place in traffic. But nobody has looked at it like this before. Portland State University researcher Kimberly Kahn said the study indicated how widespread bias was in society. The article goes further to say, we're not saying drivers are overtly racist. That's what they say. We're not saying drivers are overtly racist, Kahn said. However, the study showed drivers were following racial prejudices. These subtle forms of stereotyping are pervasive across society, and the majority of Americans had some level of subconscious bias or association just by growing up in this culture. The study also said statistics from the Center for Disease the Centers for Disease Control show that black and Hispanic men were twice as likely to die in pedestrian-related accidents than white men. Outrageous. Anyway, it goes further to say, while implicit bias does not explain the disparity in safety outcomes, it may be a contributor, Atkins said. These microaggressions in different contexts add up to become a very negative situation for some people. It is a problem if people feel threatened or if they are treated unequally. The researchers say part of the reason why these conducted, let me back up. Okay. The researchers say part of the reason why they conducted the study was to find ways to reduce pedestrian fatalities, according to the University of Arizona News. The team plans to take the study nationwide and raise awareness about pedestrian safety. We want this work to continue, and it will be very important to see if there are disparities in other parts of the country, Atkins said. But I'm alerted that we are coming up on our first break, 15 minutes to the hour. So we're going to have our first break now from a song by Rebecca Jade entitled Galaxy. This is Rebecca Jade, her song Galaxy. We'll be right back.
I've lost all sense of time.
Welcome back to Urban Society here on Indie Morel's Dollhouse Radio. Our call-in number here is area code 646-595-4038. Again, that's area code 646-595-4038. And if you do want to talk, do press 1. And I also found out that if you're listening by way of your cell phone and have called in, you can press 1 at any time. So before, I didn't know that. I didn't know that until I had called in on another Blog Talk radio show. And I have forgotten to press 1. And I was wondering why. Well, naturally, we wonder why. Well, they're not picking me up. And then finally, I thought, oh, press 1. And then when I did press the number 1, even though I was on the phone for about a good 10 minutes, I heard the voice say you're now in the queue. I said, oh, so that's how it works. Learn something new every day. Anyway, so... Also, that was a song that we just heard from Rebecca Jade entitled Galaxy. So that was a song from Rebecca Jade, Galaxy. Now, back to this article about racism at the crosswalks. I mean, in the article here, it talks about how this Chief Justice Roberts would like to believe racism and bias are a thing of the past. But it's just not him. That's many people in this country. Let's stay in this country. We can go throughout the world, but let's stay in this country. Many people in this country, black as well as white, believe or would rather believe that racism doesn't exist anymore. Honestly. And I guess such people from the jump never thought racism existed anyway. But now it's like, somehow or another, now it's like they can really say it don't exist. It's asinine. But anyway, also, still with this article here, I found it interesting when it had said that this Tara Goodard, the Portland State University researcher, said she was surprised at the differences revealed in the study. That in essence, what they found was a shock to them. They didn't know that this was true. And this was only recently. But yet, I actually have found this out decades ago. Because I never will forget, I was in a situation, I happened to have been in Germany then. Like I always say, my being in Germany, that woke me up to a lot of things, to things I probably would not have been aware of if I hadn't gone to Germany and or had stayed in this country. Because in Germany, I was living right in the midst of Caucasians. Whereas if I had stayed in this country, I would have been always in the midst of, well, black people. And my only, well, would have only seen, well, white people had gone to a store or to a movie or, you know, out into the general area or the general population. But anyway, when I was in Germany, I never will forget, and this is when I realized that racist white people will actually hit us with their cars and intentionally. Because I remember I was waiting at the crosswalk. The light was, what was it? The light was red. The light was green when I got there. And it was just turning yellow and then red. So I figured, because I was going for the bus, I figured, let me run across there quickly and, you know, catch the light before it turns red. But anyway, the light had turned red when I was almost halfway in the street. And by my peripheral vision, I happened to see a car that was turning the corner, you know, into my direction. And if I had kept, this is something that always amazes me and surprised me still then and even now. It surprised me then and surprised me now. But also, it kind of makes me think that some way, somehow, as Dr. King had said in reference to our struggle in this country, that we have cosmic companionship. I say that to say that based upon what happened that day, it was almost as if I have cosmic companionship, because what I had done, I would just say there's no way I could have did what I did on my own. What I did was, unbeknownst to me, but it was a good thing it happened, as I'm running across the street and out, and by my peripheral vision, I have seen the car coming around, turning the corner. And somehow or another, instead of running straight, I began to run sideways. So therefore, instead of running straight and would have gotten hit, I was running along the length of the car. In other words, me and the car now were going in the same direction. And then the car went on by me because it's going faster. I thought, damn, that MF would have hit me if what had happened, such as somehow or another, instead of continuing straight, my feet turned, and I was running sideways the length of the car. And I thought, wow, and that bastard, he saw me in the road. He couldn't have said he didn't, but he would have said he didn't if the SOB would have hit me. But also concerning that, there was a time later on, still in Germany, wherein a friend of mine, black guy, he had been hit by a car. Some German person had hit him and hit him intentionally and had messed up his legs. He then was walking with a brace, and I don't know what happened later on, if the brace ever came off, but he actually had to walk with a brace because that car had hit him. And, I was talking with him about that, and he was asked, he told me, man, he said, yo, man, the guy saw me. I said, well, yo, you ain't got to tell me that. I know the way it is. And he just asked me, why, man? I said, well, basically because you black. That's simple to say, easy to say, but one would think there has to be more to it than that, and or it just can't be that. But that's what it was. That's what it was. And also, another situation in reference to this, now this is in this country. Maybe I better change the names to protect the innocent, as they say. But a situation happened in broad daylight. A guy, the crosswalk in which he was at, maybe he wasn't exactly in the crosswalk, or maybe he was by the crosswalk and should have been in the crosswalk. But he was walking across the street on the crosswalk, and there's a sign there, cars must stop for pedestrians in the crosswalk. Anyway, this guy who was walking across the street evidently saw the car coming, but unfortunately, he is one of those, I'll say it like it is, I'll say it this way to make it somewhat nicer. He's one of those hit me people. Hit me, I'm getting paid. One of those people. I'm not like that at all, because I ain't trying to get paid that way. No, thank you. Keep your MF and money. But anyway, he was one of those hit me people. And the guy hit him in the middle of the road in broad daylight. He actually hit him, and the guy was in the hospital for a long time, and if I'm not mistaken, he's still in the hospital now. And for a long time, he was in a coma. That's how bad he was hit. And as I said, I'm going to change the name to protect the innocent, so to speak. The strange thing about that situation was, if we can call it strange, is that both guys had the same name, first name and last name, the same. So let us say that the guy who was hit, his name was, let us say, George Jones. The guy who hit him, his name was also George Jones. like they say, you can't make these things up. To me, I thought, wow, what a MF and coincidence. But that's the way it was. Damn. So in having read that article, I felt that I should read the article to let you all know, you all who are black, you all be careful out there in those streets, and you all wait. I mean, you see a car coming, don't just assume that he or she is going to stop. Don't assume that. As I said, wait for them to pass, because they will hit us if they can. Yes, they will, and claim that they did not see us. But, you know, aside from that, I want to also throw this in there to further illustrate that you do have people who are like that, who will just hit you just so. Don't know what's wrong with them, but just so. Case in point, I got a sister. She lived in Texas for a long time, and she was telling me how, you know, they got a lot of Mexicans down there. You know, and she has this thing about Mexicans, whatever. I think it's ignorance that she feels that way about anybody. But she was telling me I was with her in her car one day, and we were talking about driving and how people would just, in a real sense, just jump in front of a car or act like they got all day in the middle of the street, and people got places to go. I mean, especially drivers. But my sister, totally impatient, she is, and her and I were talking about stuff like that. And then she had told me once, she said, shit, I'll hit a Mexican in a minute. Unfortunately, she thinks like that. But also, as we were still driving, she was talking to me, and she had said, she said, James, you know how they have these signs that say watch out for children? I said, yes. She said, well, they ought to have a sign to say watch out for Evelyn. Her name is Evelyn. I had to laugh at that, but that was outrageous. But that's her. That's her. So, again, I mean, she don't mind hitting somebody. And she's black. Her level of, what, frustration and anxiety, whatever, it's about like that guy Aaron that I just read about from that Shakespearean play. I mean, like I said, him being the way he was, I couldn't help but think that perhaps he was like that because of all of the stress and the frustration that he encountered because of his blackness, you know. And then again, I mean, I'm taking the conversation somewhat elsewhere and saying what I'm saying, but with racist white people, it must be a thing about they feel so frustrated when they see us for some reason. And what that reason is definitely psychological. And that really should be looked into by the psychiatric community. But unfortunately, most of the psychiatrists in this country are white, and they won't investigate themselves, unfortunately, just like the police. But anyway, so moving right along from that article, I also wanted to have brought this up. Last week I was talking about Louis Farrakhan and how some people on Facebook, they weren't necessarily my friends, but I was on a Facebook friends page and other people were commenting on that march. And there was one guy who had said that because I was saying, you know, I don't know why we still listen to Farrakhan. And this one person has said that, well, but Farrakhan is a good speaker. He's a good He can be really, really rhetorical. Okay, but in reference to that, I had posted back to that guy. I had said, well, concerning Farrakhan being a good speaker, his speaking ability, I said, well, Ronald Reagan was a great speaker in the sense of articulation. Yet, what was he saying? To some, possibly many, he was saying a whole lot. Then again, to some, doubtlessly many, he wasn't saying jack other than nonsense. Then I went on to say that I recall, and this is true, I recall in the 1980s when he was president, Reagan, that is, the conversation of hunger in America was being talked of. This clown, Ronald Reagan, he said, there is no hunger in America. Hunger is a subjective sensation. And, well, but he, Reagan, is reputed to have been a great communicator. Then I wrote, OMG. But that's what it is, because he spoke well. He had the ability to articulate nonsense, which people hearing that, I guess people not knowing, thought he was saying something. But he wasn't saying, I mean, when I heard him say that, that there is no hunger in America, but what it is a subjective sensation, my head shook, because I couldn't believe what he said. I really couldn't believe it. And really, somebody's supposed to believe that. Really. But alas, that's what he said. And having said that, again, that's what I think about Farrakhan. He's articulate. But what he's saying what he's being articulate about, total nonsense. Asinine nonsense, too. But also, last week I had left off on the Tamir Rice situation. As I was saying, and then no doubt as a lot of us now know, by outside investigators, they had found that that guy having shot and killed Tamir Rice is considered a reasonable shooting. And then I'm not sure if I had gone into what they had said. Basically, they weren't, based upon these independent investigators, they weren't exactly relying on Ohio state law, whatever that law is. They were more so going by what is written in the Constitution, our Constitution. And what they were saying is that per the Fourth Amendment, that to them is what made the shooting of Tamir Rice justifiable. Because here I have something from that article there. And this article says that the only constitutional provision at issue when law enforcement officers seized an individual by using deadly force is the first clause of the Fourth Amendment that provides the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. It is significant that the Fourth Amendment does not require a law enforcement officer to be right when conducting a seizure. Rather, the standard is one of objective reasonableness. I think in my opinion, that's the catchphrase there, objective reasonableness. But then again, I think more so that that so-called objective reasonableness is not objective at all. It's purely subjective. Wow, we're going to have a break right now. Time is F-L-Y-I-N-G. But anyway, we're going to have a song from Kimber Black. Well, okay, the song is from Kimber, and it's entitled Black Renaissance. So here we go, Kimber Black Renaissance. We'll be right back.
Black Renaissance, why go? Black Renaissance, why go? Black Renaissance, why go? Black Renaissance, why go? It's a new summer era. We don't wanna see the hell of us. We fighting against each other. It's Why go, why go, why go? Black and it's all spike old, why go? Black and it's all spike old, why go, why go? Gotta get on your grind, don't confuse your mind. Let that dream come true. Stop playing a fool, chatting to my soul. Playing for forgiveness, never get lost in the world of sin. That's all I'm trying, my vision. Seeing knowledge is given, knowing what's been hidden. Living life. Only good intentions, not playing the victim. Spending my strength to perfection. Success is your best liquid. Becoming one of noble reflection. Positive vibration in the spirit. Turn up for the moment with a blessing. Remember this lesson. Truth be told through these confessions. Why you guessing? Stop stressing. Stop stressing. Renaissance, why go, why go, why go? Black Renaissance, why go, why go?
Okay, welcome back to Urban Society here on India Morel's Dollhouse Radio. We just heard a song from Kimber entitled Black Renaissance. That was Kimber entitled Black Renaissance. Our caller number here is area code 646-595-4038. Again, that's area code 646-595-4038. And right now we're talking about the unreasonable findings of the Tamir Rice situation. They're talking about how they had two independent investigators investigating this shooting, this killing. And this article that I'm reading from here, it's entitled Constitutional Standard of Review. And as I had lastly read there, it says that the Fourth Amendment does not require a law enforcement officer to be right when conducting a seizure. Rather, the standard is one of objective reasonableness. And they say this came down in a situational case of Graham versus Connor. The Supreme Court of the United States held that the determination of the reasonableness of an officer's decision to use force must be made from the perspective of an officer on the scene. But then again, as I was saying last week, you know, they're basically basing what they're saying upon the officer, him or herself, being reasonable individuals. That's what they're basing these words on. Again, that the person doing the stopping, the search, the searching, the seizuring, or the killing. They're basing this on the individual being a reasonable person. And then the article goes further to say that the court noted that officers are often forced to make split-second judgments in circumstances that are tense, uncertain, and rapidly evolving about the amount of force that is necessary in a particular situation. But again, but in the Tamir Rice case, I mean, in a real sense, when you think about it, none of this doesn't really apply. Well, they would say that it does, but it doesn't really apply, not the way I read this, because the Fourth Amendment, again, they're talking about a person being secure in their person, and I take that to mean in the sense that the police just can't come and snatch us up off the street, our personal selves. That's our person. In our houses, we understand that. Our papers, we understand that. And belongings, you know, we understand that too. But to just come up and just fire on a person, kill him, I don't think that. But okay, they may say, secure in their person like that. You know, they should be secure in their person wherein an officer doesn't have the right to just come up and shoot them without cause. But again, anything is anything and everything is everything when it comes to us and when they have to justify what they have done. even though it can be egregiously outrageous and illegal. Because again, you know, I also bring up, well, just saying, as I had said last week, I think the 14th, now, if they had gone by the 14th Amendment, perhaps they didn't go by the 14th Amendment, because if doing so, they then would have seen that there is probable grounds or cause to charge that officer. Maybe the both of them, but more so the one who did the shooting. Because the 14th Amendment states that all persons born or naturalized in the United States, which includes former slaves recently freed, in addition, it forbids states from denying any person's life. That's the clinch word there, life. Liberty comes after that, but if we don't have life, what the fuck good is liberty? I mean, that's a nonsensical question. But anyway, life. That cop just came up and snatched Tamir Rice's life away from him without cause. But, you know, but again, we have this these independent, and they even say independent investigators. And if I'm not mistaken, they're both from different states in this country. And it appears, well, no, it don't appear, but according to the district attorney there in Ohio, he had delegated to these people, I guess we can say, the authority to do these independent investigations. But at the same time, he also has said that the findings of these people will have no bearing on evidence or whatever that he will present before the grand jury. Like, really, who's going to really believe that? Well, some people will. Why? Because that's what he said. They said, well, he said it wasn't going to have no bearing, so, yeah, right, we're supposed to believe that. Like they said in that movie, what movie was that? The Clint Eastwood movie, The Outlaw Josie Wales, wherein that guy has said, yeah, you can't piss down my back and tell me it's raining. I always like that, you know. But also, in having read the 15th Amendment there, I had also gotten this that I wanted to put out there to, in a sense, indicate to those of you listening the mindset of racist individuals before and now. Okay, because I just read the 14th Amendment. I won't read it again. I hope it's in the brain, and or we can always go to the internet to look it up, or even on our phones we can pull it up. But anyway, what I also found concerning the 14th Amendment, that amendment was, how can I put it, that amendment came about also after President Lincoln had been assassinated back then, directly after the Civil War. And then this other president, who was the vice president, stepped in Lincoln's place. And that was that President Andrew Johnson. In reference to the 15th Amendment, it also was stated that President Andrew Johnson submitted a message to Congress announcing that the 14th Amendment had been sent to the states for ratification. Johnson voiced his displeasure with the amendment by stating that his actions should be considered as purely ministerial and in no sense whatever committing the executive to an approval or a recommendation of the amendment to the state legislatures, or to the people. I mean, really, that's what it says that that then President Johnson had said in terms of the 14th Amendment. And for that matter, any other amendment that was brought about to enhance the status and or humanity of former slaves, and in particular, black people in this country, because all black people at that point in time weren't slaves. They had, some had been whatever through whatever means, they were free. So therefore, slaves and also, well, former slaves and blacks who were already free. He didn't want to have nothing to do with uplifting their status and or granting any, you know, civil amendments to their status. you know, being civil to black people more so. So it's just unfortunate, but it's just unfortunate, and something has to be done in terms of these situations, because so long as these police people get off with what they are doing, they will continue to do what they are doing. Excuse me. And moving right along, I also have another article in here. I had pulled this up last week, but as we know, time flies. It just flies when you're having fun. I put it like that. Anyway, I got an article here entitled Cop Complains After Black Lives Matter Put on Coffee Cup. It says here that the Providence Police Union is speaking out after an officer received a cup of coffee with Black Lives Matter written on it. Excuse me again. The Fraternal Order of Police says the incident is unacceptable and discouraging. The officer told the union that he received a cup of coffee Friday at a Dunkin' Donuts store with the slogan written on the cup. He says an employee was rude to him also. The slogan, well, they go into when the slogan came about. And then this Lieutenant Roger Aspinall, a union member, that is police union member, told the TV station the slogan is anti-police and the Black Lives Matter movement condones violence against police. The union says it believes that all lives matter. A spokeswoman for Dunkin' Brand Group says the franchise, the spokeswoman for Dunkin' Brand Group says the franchise owner apologized to the officer and counseled the employee about her behavior. There they are, highly upset that Black Lives Matter would be put on a coffee cup. I guess, who knows? Well, who knows why that really was? And I guess it wasn't an official logo on the Dunkin' Donuts coffee cup, so no doubt it must have been a situation wherein the employee who gave the officer the coffee and coffee cup, no doubt we can assume had written it on there in, I guess, ink or magic marker, you know. But maybe that was just to piss that cop off, because you got to kind of figure and or consider that this Dunkin' Donut area, no doubt that police person came there on a daily basis, and no doubt the person behind the counter seen him or her come in there on a daily basis. And, you know, I guess this day she or he wanted to, you know, piss them off with what they knew would piss them off. And whatever, however, it made news. It made news. And it gave police officers the chance to illustrate to us just how much they are in disagreement with the now oft-repeated phrase that Black Lives Matter. And it ought to be obvious that many people in this country do not believe that Black Lives Matter. And that's obvious by the media news coverage that's given to it and the way the news coverage covers and talks about that slogan. Then, too, I have another article here that says when a Fox News panel tackled crime and policing on Wednesday, things got pretty heated, as one might expect. On The Kelly File, host Megyn Kelly asked the panelists about Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel's recent claim that protests over police brutality are driving up violence in major cities, including his, because police are hesitant to intervene. And I have a quote here from Rahm Emanuel. He says that they don't want to be a news story themselves. They don't want their career ended early, and it's having an impact.
Read some more here. Okay, it says that the first panelist, this Bob, I guess, Didio, a former NYPD detective, said that the Black Lives Matter movement and its calls for greater police accountability have negatively impacted police. He argued that the police are under attack and getting death threats. And then it goes further to say that in response, panelist Lisa Durden called that argument a racist statement and accuse those who defend the police of making them the victims instead of the people unfairly targeted by law enforcement officers. To blame Black Lives Matter movement for why you're not doing your freaking job, you robocops, is disgusting, she said. That's the same thing as saying a woman whose husband beats her is her fault because she stood up for herself. These guys are not the victims. And it goes further to say that Kelly then suggested that police officers might be worried about becoming the next Darren Wilson. And it goes further to say that that woman Darden responded by saying, by noting the penalty of people are evaluated on their job performance, and police should be no different. I would agree with that, definitely. And with what those people talk about how because of the Black Lives Matter movement that police people fear doing their jobs, imagine that. I mean, if they have such fear, it's just a no-brainer. If they do in fact have such fear, then it ought to be obvious that they ought not be police people. It's just obvious. And it should be a situation also that if they are so afraid to do their jobs, they ought to be psychiatrically evaluated as well. But perhaps this would be a good time to start issuing psychiatric or psychological evaluations to police people who feel that they can't do their job. You know, an evaluation as to find out from them why. Why do you feel you can't do your job? You feel that because people are recording what you do? You feel in some way intimidated by that? And if so, why so? You feel that that you might be the next Darren Wilson? What do you mean by that? What do you mean you may be the next Darren Wilson? What makes you think that? You know, these cops should be asked those kind of questions. You know, even just put forth a survey. I mean, when they go in for their morning shift, before they go out on the street, perhaps they ought to be given, there maybe should be something mimeographed off. And these guys, before they go out, here, fill this out. You know, why you feel like you can't do your job. And if you feel like you can't do your job, maybe you'll not be a police person, basically. Out MFM ages. But this is where we are today. Exactly, this is where we are today. And we're coming up on another break here, our 25 after the hour break we're coming up on, but it's currently only 24 after, and I don't want to just break off, you know, too soon before the song does come on. And in the meantime, when we come back, I want to touch on that article before we go into the main issues. I want to touch on that article about that child who had been suspended from some school because of him staring at a white girl. So now it is 25 after the hour, and we're going to have our next break. And this is from a song from Jasmine Sullivan entitled Brand New. This is Jasmine Sullivan, Brand New. We'll be right back.
Every girl with a rap dream, and other girls will be riding, working two jobs. But the boys at home making mixtapes with a don't disturb on the door now. Then I buy a Jeep dress every Friday, cause I go to every show on the weekend. And I gotta look good when I'm repping ya. Yeah. He about to sign a deal, he about to go.
Shit. Now you're living good. met like this.
And now I'm dialing your phone. So we both know that I deserve a throne.
I'm sorry, this number has been disconnected.
Disconnected. Who is that? Who is loving you?
Well, baby, take you and then the new crew you're rolling with. They don't know you like I do. I swear when they start making money, they start acting funny.
Okay, welcome back to Urban Society here on Andy Morrell's Dollhouse Radio. Our caller number is area code 646-595-4038. Again, that's area code 646-595-4038. And the song we just heard was from Jasmine Sullivan entitled Brand New. That was Jasmine Sullivan, her song entitled Brand New. But earlier, before I had broke for the break, I guess I said that right, okay, before I had broke for the break, as I had just said, that I was saying that when we come back, I was going to go into the 12-year-old child who had been suspended from a Catholic school, even, for supposedly having stared at a little white girl, I guess 12 years old also. But also, before I go there, I have this article in here entitled American Bar Association President Says Black Americans Face an inherently biased legal system. Just saying, it's like as if we don't and didn't already know this. But you know what? I'm saying we as in the general we, as I say, as if everybody knows this. But evidently, everybody don't know this. So perhaps what this new president of the American Bar Association has said perhaps is new news to some people. But this article I might go into at another time, but I want to move right along. I mean, there's so much stuff going on, and we can't touch on everything, but we can just touch on some things, and God bless that we can. You know, that's one reason why me, myself, I really do, in fact, appreciate doing this show. Because throughout the week, I mean, I read things on the internet, and I'm thinking, damn, you know, there must be a better way or another way in which these things can be said. Or perhaps it is a situation wherein the wrong people are saying these things, and or the people saying these things don't know anything else to say other than what they're saying. I mean, we need different thoughts on this situation that we find ourselves in, well, black people in particular, that we find ourselves in this country, and then again concerning other people, they have to figure out their own situation in this country because they have not. I mean, but black people more so, well, they have us thinking because they are on us like what's that phrase, white on rice, all over us. A lot of us still don't know what the hell is going on. Anyway, in this article here, it says that Ohio court upholds school suspension of 12-year-old boy accused of staring at a white girl. That sounds a lot like the Emmett Till situation. I guess we can be lucky or glad that we weren't waking up to hear about this child being lynched like Emmett Till had been. Wow. Anyway, it says that an Ohio court
has upheld the suspension of a 12-year-old black boy for staring at a white girl at school in what he called a staring contest, Fox 19 is reporting. The unidentified student was suspended from a private Catholic school in September of last year after school officials said he intimidated his classmate. According to the boy, he and the girl were engaged in a staring contest and that she was giggling the whole time. Court documents state the girl said she felt fearful, leading the school to suspend the boy, despite the fact that he wrote an apology saying he meant no harm. I never knew. This is the 12-year-old child talking here. They have his words in quotes. I never knew she was scared because she was laughing. I understand I'd done the wrong thing. That will never happen again. I will start to think before I do so. I am not in this situation. Well, he said, I will start to think before I do so. I am not in this situation. Well, God bless me, 12 years old. According to his parents, they filed suit to have the suspension removed from his record. The perception is he intimidated her, said his mother. My son stared at a girl who engaged in a staring contest. She giggled the entire time. According to Talbert, that's his mother, Candace Talbert, according to Talbert, the same girl was involved in an incident at the school that was much worse, yet led to no repercussions. The same girl that accused my son of this act of perception of intimidation aggressively poured milk on someone else's lunch. When she did that, there was no penalties for that. She received nothing for that. According to school administrators, their handbook states in part, the principal is the final recourse in all disciplinary matters and may waive any and all rules at his or her discretion for just cause. Imagine that. But it has happened. It definitely has. And then again, you know, it goes back because they even state in this article that the thing about perception. And we know I've spoken before on this show how a lot of people are under the, mentally abused with the pronouncement that perception is reality. That's not so. In other words, I'm saying that, as I have always said, that perception isn't reality. Reality should be more so based upon our perceptions, basically. Well, I think I'm saying that wrong. Well, more so, we have to be careful in what we think about is reality. Because perception isn't actual reality, because we can perceive anything, but that doesn't mean that what we are mentally perceiving is perceived in the correct way. That's what I more so mean. But anyway, you know, concerning this article here, I'm going to relate something personal here with my own self, because this article brought my situation back to mind. I remember this back when I was in second grade. I'll tell it like this. I was in second grade. And it was in a spelling class that we had. And there was this little girl, a white girl. I was like maybe 8 years old. No, in second grade I was 9 because I started to school late. I was like 9 years old in second grade. No, 7 in second. However, 7 or 8 in second. You know how that go. 5 in kindergarten, 6 in first, 7 in second. Yes, so I was 8 in second grade because I started school late. I was 6 in kindergarten. Anyway, in second grade spelling class, there was this little girl, white girl too. Every day, I sat next to her every day in class. It just happened like that. But what began to happen was that every day she would actually, grease herself and have me play with her. And you have to understand that I wasn't the initiator of that act or action. She was. Because there I am, 7 years old, 8 years old, in school, spelling class. Maybe that's why I'm so good at reading now, because I paid attention more so than not in spelling. But anyway, she would actually, have me play her, but I indulged her. I didn't know any better. I guess she didn't know any better, but maybe she did. But anyway, one day, the teacher called us. the teacher, her name was Miss Salem. She called us, and because, you know, in spelling class, she was reading from her spelling book, and the thing was, she was so outraged at what she saw that she actually flung the spelling book out of her hand and hit me in the eye with it. And it hurt. But don't you know, I screamed bloody murder because I knew that, well, at that point, I knew that what I had done or what I was doing, it wasn't really acceptable. So my thing was, even then I was knowing, scream. And I just screamed like my eye was out and like I was dying. But I didn't get in any trouble. I don't know if that girl did. And, I don't know if she did either, but I know I didn't really get in any trouble. The only thing that I recall coming out of that situation, naturally, I was taken to the principal. What I recall coming out of that situation was the principal, he had me after school. And what he did was give me a checkerboard. And as I reflected over that in years going by from that situation, I had to reflect that perhaps he gave me that checkerboard so he thought to take my mind off stuff like that. And today was neither here nor there. But all I'm saying is that this situation brought that back to my mind about this 12-year-old kid and just staring at that girl like that. And then again, my situation in that second grade classroom with that little girl who encouraged me to play with her. I mean, play with her sexually. I mean, she's 7, I'm 8. Kids, we're just kids. But anyway, so that happened, and that brought that up to mind, and I wanted to bring that up out there to show or illustrate differences. I guess I was lucky, because I'm talking at that time, that was like back in, 1967, 1968, only a few years after Emmett Till put it like that. So I'm going to go on in. I wanted to have gotten to another article, but I'm going to go on in to this thing about intersectionality. You know, is in my opinion, it is in fact a new, I'll even call it a new philosophical construction, something to think about, well, somewhat philosophically, that has been brought up. And what led me to this thing about intersectionality, it was somewhat by accident that I stumbled upon it, because I had, what was it? I think I must have seen via Facebook, because I don't watch those kind of shows. They have some kind of an award show, and this person, Viola Davis, had won some kind of an award. And I recall having read that she had said some things primarily including black women, and hadn't said a thing about, you know, black men or black people inclusively. She was just so bent on extolling the virtues of black women. And what I had written in response to that on Facebook, I had written, I had seen on my cousin's Facebook timeline a picture and quote indicating what Viola Davis had said upon winning an award recently. Upon reading Miss Davis's words, this thought came to mind. Why does it seem black women single themselves out and aside and away from black men? Her statement would have been exclusively inclusive if she had included not just women, but black people, period. Hence, it's not just black women, in more cases than not, who are excluded from opportunities, but black people, here and abroad. Alas, I guess as quiet as it's kept, it's easier talking about and for black women than it is speaking about black people as a group. Interesting. Then again, I didn't watch the award show. Perhaps it was an award show for women. Pardon my intrusion, if that was the case. And I was surprised that a cousin of mine, second generation cousin, God bless her, because I like seeing my the younger generations of my family, you know, come up and you know, able to voice their thoughts, their opinions. It's interesting because I remember seeing them as children, babies, can't even talk, but God bless. But she wrote this back to me. She said, yes, it was the award for best actress in a drama series. She was the first black woman to even win that award in 67 years of the show. She took her moment to acknowledge the lack of quality roles for black women, giving them the opportunity to be nominated and win these awards. She quoted Harriet Tubman and names all of black actresses who are in leading roles in TV. Also, she says, my cousin says, also not to be petty, but I find it very disheartening that in the occasion a black man wins an award, no one questions why there is slash was no mention of the black woman. Black women are expected to advocate for ourselves and our men at all times, and often this sentiment is not reciprocated. That's what my cousin said. And then another Facebook friend had said, her name is Annetta Sam T. I'll pronounce her name, Annetta Sam T. And my cousin is Tasha Bronson Bryan. Annetta has said, black women are always front and center for black men. But when is the last time a black man stood up for anything to do with us? And then I had responded back to the both of them by saying, I agree but disagree with what the both of you are saying, Tasha and Annetta. What I'm saying is how, especially in these days, if not in all our days in this country, the black woman has always been more out front than the black man, as quiet as is kept. Even if she may have been behind the scenes, she was still up front in the mind of black men. I'd suggest the black woman of yesterday is not the black woman of today. The black woman of the days and years gone by always knew the black man and woman moved together or not at all. Thus, advancement for either of us is and was recognized for an advancement for both of us. Perhaps I'm wrong in suggesting this, but it is what it appears to me. It's almost as if the black woman of today craves her seat in the front, yet at the same time forgetting that those whom we struggle against would much rather have a woman in his or her face than the men of those of them they are hell-bent on suppressing. Take it to another area or level. Of late, I hear it mentioned how, often how black women who find themselves victims of this system, how their names are rarely ever mentioned. However, it's like those who voice this concern forget that it's not black men or black people in general who are in control of media or have wide access to media outlets. Thus, it's the fault of those whom we find ourselves struggling against who are at fault for this, not black men. That's something that I find that many of us tend to forget. And also, I'm still going into the section of intersectionality. And in doing so, I even got some history about the women's movement in reference to black people and black men. I got something here that says Elizabeth Cad Stanton and Susan B. Anthony, they both opposed the 15th Amendment because it gave African-American men the right to vote but did nothing to advance women's rights. In doing so, they broke with other suffragists who believed it was the Negro hour and formed the American Women's Suffrage Association. So we just heard that. I hadn't known that about Susan B. Anthony, that she and this other woman, Elizabeth Cass Stanton, had actually opposed the 15th Amendment, granting black people, black men, well, black people per se, more so, the right to vote, because they felt if women shouldn't have it, well, why should black men have it, you know? But anyway, Frederick Douglass, he was around then. And this is what Frederick Douglass had to say, because Frederick Douglass was also a suffragist, a women's suffragist. He believed in political, he believed that women should be just as equal as men, so therefore he believed that women should have the right to vote. Yes, he did. But anyway, and he advocated for that. But however, Frederick Douglass had had wrote this, and it's dated September 27th, 1868, which is round about the time the 15th Amendment was ratified through the Congress. Frederick Douglass said, "My dear friend, I am impelled by no lack of generosity in refusing to come to Washington to speak in behalf of women, of woman suffrage. The right of woman to vote is as sacred in my judgment as that of man, and I am quite willing at any time to hold up both my hands in favor of this right. It does not, however, that I can come to Washington or go elsewhere to deliver lectures upon this special subject. I am now devoting myself to a cause not more sacred, certainly more urgent, because it is life and death to the long enslaved people of this country, and this is Negro suffrage. While the Negro is mobbed, beaten, shot, stabbed, hanged, burnt, and is the target of all that is malignant in the North and all that is murderous in the South, his claim may be preferred by me without exposing in any wise myself to the imputation of narrowness or meanness towards the cause of women. As you very well know, woman has a thousand ways to attach herself to the governing power of the land and already exerts an honorable influence on the course of legislation. She is the victim of abuse, to be sure, but it cannot be pretended that I think that her cause is as urgent as that of ours. I never suspected you of sympathizing with Miss Anthony and Miss Stanton in this course. Their principle is that no Negro shall be enfranchised while woman is not. Now, considering that white men have been enfranchised already, always, and colored men have not, the conduct of these white women whose husbands, fathers, and brothers are voters does not seem generous. Very truly yours, Fred Douglass." That's what Frederick Douglass has said. And the 15th Amendment, as we know, to the Constitution granted African-American men the right to vote by declaring that the right of citizens of the United States to vote should not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of race, color, or previous condition of servitude. So that was that. That argument was way back then. But however, it pertained primarily to black men and white women. There was this struggle. I guess we could say this struggle in terms of allegiance. Who was going to be in favor of the women's right to vote, and then who was going to be in favor of the Negro's right to vote? And Frederick Douglass spoke in terms of the urgency, and he also spoke in terms of how the white woman already had influence upon legislation in the country anyway, wherein the black man, black woman, had none. But then again, when it comes to the black woman, I mean, she didn't have anything anyway, and the way it does pan out, it was like the right to vote was extended to black men, as it was said, and not black women, because women at that point in time didn't have the right to vote. But fast forward quickly. When women did get the right to vote, that right wasn't extended to black women, although it should have been, but it was not. And how much did the women's movement of that day propagate for black women to vote? As we know, they propagated enough for themselves, But like when it came to black women, not even, or black people for that matter. So it's a different struggle, and it shouldn't be seen as the same struggle. But however, with this situation of intersectionality, it tends to say that it is and that it should be. It's a strange to me, it's an interesting, if not philosophical, psychological construction here. Because this brief statement here that I have about intersectionality, it says intersectionality or intersectionalism is the study of intersections between forms or systems of oppression, domination, or discrimination. An example is black feminism, which argues that the experience of being a black woman cannot be understood in terms of being black and of being a woman considered independently, but must include interactions which frequently reinforce each other. Some of that I understood, but a lot of that I didn't understand. I understand where it said, an example is black feminism, which argues that the experience of being a black woman cannot be understood in terms of being black. I understand that proposition, but I wonder if it is, in fact, actually true. I'll put it this way. It probably is more true than false, but I wouldn't say that is all the way true. But it goes further, this article here, this section that I'm reading from. It says this feminist sociological theory was first named by Kimberly Crenshaw in 1989. Note the date, please, 1989. Though the concept can be traced back to the 19th century. The theory suggests that and seeks to examine how various biological, social, and cultural categories such as gender, race, class, ability, sexual orientation, religion, caste, and other axes of identity interact on multiple and often simultaneous levels, contributing to systemic injustice and social inequality. Intersectionality holds that the class conceptualization of oppression within society, such as racism, sexism, biphobia, homophobia, transphobia, and belief-based bigotry, do not act independently on one another. Instead, these forms of oppression interact, creating a system of oppression that reflects the intersection of multiple forms of discrimination. Now, in a real sense, all of that would have to be deciphered, all that I just read there. It would have to be deciphered, because based upon the way this person, Kimberly Crenshaw, has stated this, she has stated all those ideological leanings, she placed them all on the same level in a real sense. Wherein, I'll put it this way, they may be on the same level, possibly are on the same level. However, I would put it that they're on the same level, but different points on that line of progression. I would put it that way. And because they are at different points on that line of progression, they are not the same thing. I would definitely put it like that. But there's more to be said about that anyhow. But I just find it interesting that what was her name again? Crenshaw, last name Crenshaw, Kimberly Crenshaw, came up with this, I'll put it this way, this ideological construction. Interesting. But also, I have something here that says intersectionality, a primer. And it says here that, is feminism for everyone or just the middle class? The movement has grown in visibility and delivered gains, but critics say the gains aren't evenly distributed. I mean, in a real sense, I mean, that ought to be obvious that they wouldn't be, because they're not the same thing. Like I said, they're different. They're on the same level. They are, or maybe can be, on the same level. If they are on the same level, they are at different points on that line of progression. Definitely so. So therefore, they wouldn't be given the same thing, or they wouldn't achieve the same gains at the same time. the one, let's put it this way, the one group that's further along that line of progression would receive more favorable or would be more recognized firstly than the others who are further back on that same line and level. That's just the way it is. And therefore, it would have to seem that this is some kind of a some kind of a trick thing. I would say not properly thought out for genuine African-American inclusion into this society. And for that matter, black women's inclusion into this society, which is what this woman is more so about than not. And she goes further to say that social media hashtags such as Solidarity Is for White Women call out supposed activists for setting agendas that address only concerns of a single, relatively privileged group, middle-class white women. Over the past several years, intersectionality has become a feminist buzzword, deployed in discussions of pop culture, political action, and academic debate. That's what it is. It's also concerning, it says that it's a thing about academic debates. I mean, they're debating this idea in academia, which is nothing wrong with that. But in a sense, it's just debating just to debate. What's going to be the outcome? But anyway, the article goes further to say that considering its recent prominence, it's surprising to realize that the term has been around only since 1989. It was coined by a legal scholar, this Kimberly Crenshaw. It was coined by a legal scholar and critical theorist in a paper illustrating how black women were often marginalized by both feminists and anti-racist movements because their concerns did not fit comfortably within either group. But see there, when we think about feminist group per se, we're thinking about white feminists. And then when we're thinking about anti-racist movements, we are more so talking about whites who become anti-racist. But okay, I've got about a minute left here, and there's more to this article. And I want to continue this article on into next week, as well as get to some of the other articles that I didn't get to. But everything is relevant that I had spoken on tonight, and I believe that it was necessary to have heard these things. Because like I say again, I'm very grateful to Indy Morrell and the Dollar House Radio Network for giving me the time to voice my thoughts on this. But I have to sign off for now. We'll hear us next week. Have a good night.
Bricks them girls in my pot, the boom boom, them I wind up them waist, them I pot, the boom boom. Queens them girls in my pot, the boom boom, them I wind up them waist, them I pot, the boom boom. Trinity them girls in my pot, the boom boom, them I wind up them waist, them I pot, the boom boom. Jamaican girls in my pot, the boom boom, them I wind up them waist, them I pot, the boom boom.
Yo, he in love with a ghetto girl. He said he want a piece like Mother World. Pat pat on the kitty cat. He don't mess with them regulars. He tryna kick it like a ninja. He tryna stick it like syringes. He don't ever play the benches, so I'ma let him touch it. They be playing with some engines.
I know that you want it. I see that you watching. You love when I whine it. You know that I'm sexy. I hope that you ready to come here and get it.
With it, at y'all then.
Bitch, them girls, them my pot, the boom boom, them my wine up, them waist, them my pot, the boom boom. Queens, them girls, them my pot, the boom boom, them my wine up, them waist, them my pot, the boom boom. Trinity, them girls, them my pot, the boom boom, them my wine up, them waist, them my pot, the boom boom. Jamaican girls, them my pot, the boom boom, them my wine up, them waist, them my pot, the boom boom.
Put it in his face like a cop badge. He wanna pun it like a hashtag. He gonna have to get the watch rag. If he shoot it up, I'ma bust back. Them island girls is the bandits. American girls run the planet. South African, European, Asian, Australian, and the Canadian girl.
I know that you want it. I see that you watching. You love when I whine it. You know that I'm sexy. I hope that you're ready to come here.
them.
Bricks them girls, them a pop the pum pum, them a wind up them waist, them a pop the pum pum. Queens them girls, them a pop the pum pum, them a wind up them waist, them a pop the pum pum. Trini them girls, them a pop the pum pum, them a wind up them waist, them a pop the pum pum. Jamaican girls, them a pop the pum pum, them a wind up them waist, them a pop the pum pum.
All the bad boys try to push up on me. If you want a bad girl, come and spend his money. Say it tastes good, just like honey. In love with a girl from the islands and not a miniskirt glow. I know that you want it, I see that you watching. You love when I whine it.